It's called Let's Keep the Flames of Hope Alive. Never let the fires die. Let's keep the flames of hope alive. And never let the fires die. Take the lie of the lie.
This is Steve Fulton, one of the co-founders of TheAlarm.com. And we are here to do a new, brand new, long time coming, official Alarm podcast.
Yes, we are. This is Jeff Fulton, Steve's brother. I worked with him on the Alarm.com, worked on the original The Mailing List with Steve Vardy. That was a long time ago. I worked on the original Alarm Archive, which I think Steve put it on a disc and sent it to Gathering 5.
Yeah.
But in any case, this is Never Let the Fire Die.
This is the Alarm Podcast.
The official Alarm Podcast.
And we're going to be talking about all sorts of things about the Alarm.
Every member, every band.
Everything.
From Quasimodo to Small Town Glory and beyond.
And beyond. Everything. Everything in between. Mike Peters solo, the original Alarm, the new guys, everything. And we're going to treat it with respect, because that's what we do here.
We treat everything with respect the way it deserves.
The way everyone's artistic creations deserve respect. And so we have a topic. Each one of these podcasts is going to have a specific topic. And we've already chosen our topic for today's. But first, I wanted to talk a little bit about how we discovered the Alarm the first time. So what year was that, Jeff?
About 1983.
I think it was October 1983,
right.
I'm going to guess. And we had a there was a syndicated show called MV3 or Video Hits or Video One at the time, not Video Hits One, Video One. I can't remember. It had changed names from MV3 to Video One, with Richard Blade as the VJ. It was on for an hour every night at 5 o'clock. So when we got home from seventh grade or eighth grade, I think it was eighth grade, 5 o'clock at night, we had this infusion for an hour of new wave, and it was mostly new wave that was played. And there's some you know, R&B or, you know, like Atomic Dog and that sort of stuff.
A few things, but mostly it was alternative rock. Richard Blade at the time worked at K-Rock,
right?
And so most of the songs were inspired by what K-Rock was playing out here in Los Angeles.
So I remember one day sitting and watching Video One or MV3. I'm pretty sure it was Video One by that point.
At that point.
And on comes a video for Sunday Bloody Sunday by U2. And I'd never seen anything like it before. I'm like, what's this? This is amazing.
So was that a Red Rocks video?
It was a Red Rocks or whatever. Or, you know, I think Mike told that story. I don't know if it was actual Red Rocks or whatever it was. Yes, that video. Then, I guess it was. I don't know. Was it Red Rocks? Who knows? Anyway.
I think it was.
Next up, right after that, was a video by The Alarm, The Stand. And I got to tell you, when I saw that video, I forgot all about U2 before it. The Alarm represented in that video everything I'd been looking for that I didn't even realize I was looking for when I saw it.
And, yeah, especially, you know just the sheer kick-butt rock element.
It was the music. It was the way they were dressed, what they were doing. You know, they were spray-painting stuff. It broke ground. It broke mold. It was totally different. You know, before you see Cyndi Lauper, you know, two videos before, and Shalimar three videos later. But here's the Alarm just kicking ass.
Amazing guitars and harmonica, just blowing it away. I'd never heard anything like it before.
And that started, you know, on, you know, to this day, you know, what I believe, you know, I saw the future of the best band in the world that day. And I still believe it. And that's what we're here for. That's why we're still here. That's why a lot of people who listen to podcasts are still here, because they still believe that. We all know what happened, or at least most people know what happened to the Alarm. But that doesn't mean for the bright, shining time that they were a band altogether, and plus the stuff they've done afterwards, that they weren't doing something very special and amazing. And that's what we're here to talk about.
Maybe not given the respect due to them, by critics,
right? You know,
rock critics.
I think we will go into some of that. I think we'll have an episode where we talk about, you know, what critics said and how criticism spread around the world in a time when people rock journalists were too lazy to listen to records themselves. But today we want to talk about not the beginning, but what?
The end.
We're going to talk about the end. We're going to talk about the last official Alarm song. That means the last song on a record that was ever credited to the band The Alarm. Because I always felt the few songs, and there were just a few, but the songs that were credited to The Alarm in the credits, always felt like that was what the band was saying themselves.
Right.
Like that, and that, maybe I was wrong, but when I was a kid, I'm like, oh, The Alarm has a song. It's credited to The Alarm. This must be what all the guys together are trying to
say. It wasn't a McDonald Peters. It wasn't a Twist Shark. Or Shark Twist, it was The Alarm. Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, McDonald Peters, amazing songs. Sharp songs, Sharp Twist, amazing songs. But we're just talking about the feeling of being, you know, a kid and opening up that record jacket.
Giant record jacket.
And seeing, oh, this is a song credited to The Alarm. And meet the feeling that those songs meant something special. Because if you go back, you'll see The Stand was credited to The Alarm. The Deceiver was credited to The Alarm. The Chant Has Just Begun, credited to The Alarm, I believe. So those were things where you're like, oh, this is the band making a statement about something. And the final song that The Alarm credited to themselves as a band.
On record.
Chronologically. was named Let the River Run Its Course.
Now, at the time, it being the last full band song, because after it was Save Your Crying and Wonderful World, correct?
Which is basically Dave Sharp's solo song.
Dave Sharp's songs, and Mike Peters actually told me just a few days ago that they were all recorded at the same sessions. But to me, the three Dave Sharp songs sound like they're recorded.
On Raw?
Yeah, on Raw.
They sound like recorded at a different place.
Sound like a different place. Now,
maybe a different mindset.
Different mindset, but there's a different sound to it. But in any case, Let the River Run Its Course, I have to admit that I didn't like very much when I first heard it.
I didn't like it very much at first.
I was at the time, you know, alternative rock was turning more towards what we really liked, which was more of a punk rock feel.
Right.
And we thought Raw was going to have that feel. And to some extent, it does. There are elements of it that are turning in that
Raw
direction.
Has, you know, I feel like Raw, like the punk rockers of Raw is like if you took a piece of paper and you burnt the edges around the edge. Raw is burnt around the edges, but the contents are still the same, and because they just didn't push it far enough.
And many of the songs are songs from either earlier, in the band's history. I mean, around most of the songs on it were actually written around the Change era.
Right. So let's take a look. Okay. So Raw, that's new.
That's a new song.
That's actually credited to The Alarm.
To The Alarm.
So we know.
And I actually, when I first heard that single, I thought this is a great tune. It got played a lot of airplay on KLOS out here, which was a rock station. Some airplay on K Rock, but K Rock was moving in a different direction at the time. And they played it when the band was here. And in fact, they played So Many Down the River, got played so much airplay.
Right.
But when the band came out to tour the final time, they got a lot of airplay. A lot of fans came out to see those shows, but they're smaller venues than before. The largest venue was the Palladium, and that's about a 1,500-person venue.
This is in Los Angeles.
In Los Angeles. There were no Irvine Meadows shows. There were no Will Turn shows. These were all at smaller venues, but there were a lot of people there.
So what I find interesting, though, is people did like Raw. I think it was a pretty good song. I think the version on the record didn't end as well, as it kind of peters out, and the version they played live was way better.
Way better.
But anyway, that's a song for another time. But I just want to talk about the songs on this record. You've got Raw, which is new. We never heard that, but that was not any demos or anything we heard before. Rock in the Free World is a cover. A lot of people love Rock in the Free World. I personally don't count it as part of this record. I'm very biased. I wanted all new songs. So I like Rock in the Free World. I think it's a great song, but I don't count it in the Alarm pantheon of songs at all.
Alarm had just been playing live with
with Neil Young.
Neil Young. My God. And then and so they were playing his song.
Right. So we know that Robbie, they must have gone in the studio and recorded that. Rob. That sounds like it. And we go and Rock the Fair World. There's a cover. God Save Somebody. Dave Sharp had been playing solo on a solo tour like the year before.
Yeah, when we saw
in 1990. Yeah. So we know that that was a new song. Moments in Time, I would have thought was new,
but it's not.
But it's on Alarm.Change.Demos as Coming Home. So that was recorded either for Change or in between that time, because aren't necessarily all demos for Change. Tell Her High Water, that's new.
That's new.
I believe that's
and it's actually double. A pretty kick-ass rock
I like
song.
It. I like Tell Her High Water.
It's a pretty kick-ass rock
great song.
So Lead Me Through the Darkness is the next song, and that's also in the Change demos. I think it actually dates back earlier than that, though.
We'll have to talk to Mike about that. I believe someone said it was played during Eye of the Hurricane era. So even that's not a new song.
You know what? Actually, on the Change demos, it mentions that they took time out to create these demos during the Eye of the Hurricane tour. So it could have been the first finished song that they all liked to play together as an alarm song during that time.
We'll have to ask Mike about the timing of that. We're gonna get Mike Peters to chime in on all of this in this podcast, which is great. So we're gonna get a lot of input. It's not just us talking about it. But the next song on Raw is Let the River Run Its Course, which is the one we're gonna talk about today. The other two songs, Save Your Crying, dates back to Dave's demos from Eye of the Hurricane, so 1986, and Wonderful World. Dates back to the Change demos.
Change demos.
And also
just about 88.
That on tour. So if you imagine what happened when they went to record Raw is basically they recorded three new songs and the rest they kind of picked out of what was already existed. So the three new songs that the band recorded, Raw, credit to the Alarm, Hell or High Water, credit to McDonald Peters, and actually I take it back. That's it. Because Save Your Crying and Wonderful World are from the new demos. So
no, I guess the road, which didn't make it on the record, but was the single that was put out for Standards was an alarm song.
Yeah, I think so. So we're today though. I want to talk about Let the River Run Its Course, and let's play a little bit of it so we can set the tone.
Got it.
This ground too long.
Okay.
All right, Jeff, so what do you think about what we just listened to?
Well, I like it much more now than I remember then.
I like it a lot more now than I remember then.
It has a soaring chorus. It has Dave Sharp's signature guitar. It actually has acoustic playing. It has a little bit of chunky chord playing. It's got the elements of an alarm song that I liked.
For some reason, it just didn't fit all together. It's very B-side-like to me.
I don't know what to say about it. At this point in time, I'd love to hear the whole band play that song, the original four members.
Yeah, we know how much of a chance there is of that. So, but what I will say is that it has the elements of what should have been a great alarm song. And I'm not saying it's not good. It's just never caught me as a song. I think at the time... Again, this is the era of Nirvana and Pearl Jam and the year that punk broke for real.
And Green Day, at this point I was going back and buying the old Green Day records and I was, you know, I know that
I
they
was buying the Goo Goo Dolls.
Goo Goo Dolls record.
That's the third record.
Yeah.
But anyway, the idea being that I'm listening to that stuff and I'm like, well, this is okay, but it reminded me more of Styx and some stuff from the 70s and the Alarm, and then that was the problem.
The Stand had been the anti-Styx.
Yeah, this now seemed like they had gone back to that, and I think that's the issue. But here's something interesting. I don't think this is the first time they actually tried to record this song. And I think we have to go at least out to the back to the strength demos to hear what this song.
Change demo.
Oh, sorry, excuse me. Back to the change demos to hear what this song might have sounded like.
Because there is a song on there. Do we want to name it?
No. Nope. Let's just play a little bit and talk about it.
Play a little bit, and then we'll talk about it.
2, 3, 4. Every day in the struggle to survive, I see good and I see bad. We've seen our dreams turn to dust, and now we must rebuild them. There'll be no more second chances, we must not lose it again. Tonight, my friend, on to the end. Tonight, from strength to strength.
Okay, what do you think of that, Jeff?
Well, it's a great beginning to a song. We didn't play the whole song, of course, but it sounds like they're trying to make the next Spirit of 76.
Yeah, I mean, that is what it sounds like. And then what's interesting about that is it's definitely not how Let the River Run Its Course ended up. I think, to me, Let the River Run Its Course is more like trying to do another Rescue Me that kind of isn't quite as good.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But that song is not that way. Now, it's not fully realized at all. But there was one interesting section in that song that we didn't play, but I think we should play that now.
We will.
It's sort of a little. It's a little. It's like where the song comes down. We call it the middle eight, which we'd like to call it, or the.
Maybe it's a bridge.
The bridge. Basically, it's a little part that's different, and it sounds like the Mercy Lights portion of Spirit of 76.
And it also sounds like Eddie McDonald is singing it.
And Eddie says something in that portion that I think is really interesting. So I think we should play that part right now.
Okay, let's do it.
And then we will we'll get back to why that sounds interesting.
To the end. Tonight, my love, I'll never find the way you walk, the way you say. Tonight, my friend, young Georgie died.
Georgie?
Who's Georgie?
So Eddie just saying something about young Georgie died. Now, doesn't that kind of does feel like the name checking they did at Spirit of 76, but a different person?
We're going to have to ask Mike about that. And luckily, we did, and
what Mike did was provide us with an earlier song than this one, a song from, he says it's from the early, what, Eye of the Hurricane Dub demos, did he say?
I think so, early.
And it's called Georgie, and we're going to play some of that for you right now so you can see the real beginnings of Let the River Run Its Course.
Away
crap. Sorry about the quality. That was the best remastering we could do of what was basically sounds like something that was recorded in the pocket of someone.
Yeah, like, it's like a
with a tape with a cassette recorder, not even use a chrome tape.
Yeah.
And that was from the Eye of the Hurricane
sessions. This is the Gaslight sessions, is what Mike said.
Yes, the Gaslight sessions.
But that was like an amazing song. Like, you wonder how that's left off Eye of the Hurricane.
And actually, to tell you guys the truth, I mean, there's 10 minutes of that.
Yeah, we edited that down a lot because the quality's bad.
If we had a full electric studio quality version of that song, that could have been the entire Eye of the Hurricane record. But it's actually fantastic, but it's hard to listen to because of the actual sound quality.
But you see, there's Georgie again. And we wonder, you know, who's Georgie?
So we asked Mike Peters, and
this is what he had to say.
Here's his answer to that question. Mike, we just listened to the first incarnation of what would be Let the River Run Its Course and Strength the Strength, called Georgie. Who's Georgie? Do you remember?
To be quite honest, I can't really remember where the Georgie title came from. At the time, we liked The Killing of Georgie, the Rod Stewart song. That was one of Rod Stewart's finer moments as a songwriter, I always remember thinking. And it's still a great song. You know, one of the last great ones he wrote when he was moving across to his more disco Do You Think I'm Sexy face. But The Killing of Georgie was a great song, and that was something we were attracted to, the idea of telling a story through the song, which had really started in the Spirit of 76, using real people. And the idea of Georgie, I think, was just something that came in the writing of the song, and it, singing that hook line during the writing, it just came out unconsciously and seemed to stick as the title. It was more of a working title for the song. I think it was something that had come from quite a few different ideas that had been put together by Eddie and I.
Mike, that sounds like an incredible time and songwriting process. Can you go into it more?
At the time of the writing, Eddie and I were working closely at his flat in Edgware in the north of London. And I was staying with him and his then wife, Sharon. And so it was morning till night songs, Monday to Friday, really. I was living at home in Wales myself personally, and travelling to London to write during the week, Monday to Friday. And then Friday afternoon, I'd get in my car or the train and head up to North Wales to see Jules at Bangor University and be at home. And I never liked the idea of living permanently in London. And so the Georgie song, as it was known, was something that was part of the running for Eye of the Hurricane, and was a song we had high hopes for, I think. The fact that it's in there in the master demos, and you can hear quite a full arrangement. You know, Mark Taylor was playing on it. You can hear his keyboards in the background. And it was something that we took from a songwriting level and involved the whole group in. So it was definitely a contender.
A contender, I'll say. You know, what's interesting about that song, and again, it's hard to do. You kind of have to go back and listen to it multiple times and train your ear to it, unfortunately, to hear some of those sounds. But to me, it sounds a lot like Elders and Folklore. There's some of that in there. There's some of Shelter. There's some of Rescue Me. A lot of the best sounds from Eye of the Hurricane are incorporated in that song, which is really interesting to me. What about you, Jeff? What do you think about it?
Well, to me, it sounded like it might have been a long demo for what could have been on Eye of the Hurricane.
Well, that's because everyone didn't get to hear it, but it's 10 minutes long.
It's
very long.
That's why I said this. It sounded like 10 minutes of what could have been Eye of the Hurricane. What I meant was it's all these pieces and parts of Eye of the Hurricane.
Right. The length also belies kind of a Spirit of 76 part two.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. And it sounds good, but you know what? But it's in the key and the blue, I like to call frame of Eye of the Hurricane.
It feels blue to me.
Rather than
the
silver and red of Strength, yep. It's the blue
it's
of Eye of the Hurricane.
Definitely blue. Definitely new, blue. In my head, I saw blue when that's playing.
New key. I guess a new key. I get that.
Whatever it's called.
But I did ask Mike Peters whether this was a 9-minute demo for Eye of the Hurricane and not just Georgie. And he answered that question.
And then right after, we're going to say he's going to – we also want to know why this song didn't end up on Eye of the Hurricane in the first place. He answers both of those questions.
Yeah, so let's go there now, you guys. So, Mike, Steve and I just listened to that 9-minute demo of Georgie that sounds a lot like a demo that could have been for all the songs off of Eye of the Hurricane. And we just want to get your take on that. Like, what were the other guys thinking? How did they feel about this 9-minute song you guys put together?
It's safe to say the band was changing in the rehearsal sessions of Eye of the Hurricane. We survived a pretty tumultuous storm in the run-up to that. Nigel and David really persisted with the idea that they didn't want to work with, particularly with Mike Peters and Eddie McDonald's songs, that they wanted to break that up and work on songs that were written by the whole band. And although, as it was Georgia, it was a McDonald Peters song at its inception. I'm not sure where it transformed across to becoming an alarm song as such that involved Nigel and Dave in the writing. When you consider Mark Taylor's playing on it as well, and when it was released as Let the River Run Its Course, it was credited as an alarm song, but you could say that Mark had a claim to it if we're going to use the rules of the campaign.
Okay, so to get this totally straight then, on this demo, everybody's playing, not just you and Eddie.
It was a song you can hear. It's unfinished, but there's quite a full arrangement. I think Nigel had been obviously listening to a bit of Van Halen. You can hear that kind of jump backbeat going on. Eddie and I had been listening to a lot of American rock music. It was that era. We'd spent a lot of time there on the Strength album, soaking up what was going on in the radio. It was the beginnings of the sort of Bon Jovi era in a way, and all the big songs that were being written for those artists, Aerosmith, Bon Jovi, they were really being written by people like Diane Warren, Desmond Child, and a lot of bands of that size were having their material written for them, even though the songwriting credits were hidden away. And it wasn't the case for the Alarm. We wrote all our own songs. But we studied what was going on. Eddie was a big fan of the Bon Jovi choruses, which often ran B minor to G, D to A, or they were in A minor to F, C to G. That was a new change in a way. It was a classic four chord format, but it was twisted around that the beginning chord was the minor chord, not the three majors. And I think that was something that was attractive to Eddie, and he'd come to me, "I found this great change," and that's how we often worked. Eddie would discover a great chord change, and then we'd adapt it into our own work, and build new ideas around those chord sequences.
Oh, okay, interesting, because this is something we've discussed before that. You know, Eye of the Hurricane is really a beginning of a new era, definitely a new set of sounds, and Georgie sounds like that, and it really shows in the songwriting of this period.
So Hurricane was a shift from the sort of more instinctive punk rock style that had really driven Declaration and Strength. I think Eye of the Hurricane was the beginning of an era where we sort of considered ourselves more professional songwriters and tried to bring that into the band under quite an adverse situation. It wasn't nice having to go back into rehearsals and work on songs that you knew two of the band members were being resentful about.
Whoa, wait a minute. It's a lot of really good information here. Slow down a second. Explain what was going on at this time and how songs were written and why it was so much of a problem to do this and create this record.
It was a very difficult, very trying time. And I think it's fairly common noise on record. I found the Eye of the Hurricane record quite a difficult record to write lyrically. I think that was because I didn't feel like I was as in touch with the other, with certainly with Nigel and Dave. There was quite a gap opening up between us all. And whereas when we'd made Declaration of Strength, that gap was still close enough to feel like you could write and represent everybody who was in the group. All of a sudden, I felt I was writing for a group where I didn't quite understand where two of the members were coming from all the time, and felt challenged. Even if it was silently, you did feel challenged at all times. And it was disconcerting. It was a tough time to work because you weren't really being valued by the closest around you. It was a challenge to get songs through. You could feel that resentment that someone wanted to felt that they were owed a credit because they were actually in the room when you played the song for the first time. But it's funny that how that, again, it didn't apply to Mark Taylor, who was there at the same time for most of the Eye of the Hurricane rehearsals. So it was a difficult situation to work through. And I think you can hear it in the songs. There's a little bit of there's many directions being followed, different songwriting techniques and folk music idioms, which were at the core of songs like Hallowed Ground, New South Wales, which is around at that time. And then you've got the more pop rock style, which is evident in Georgie.
All right. So I know this question might be a little bit redundant now after all your explanation, but who actually chose not to put a fully fleshed out version of Georgie, take those ideas and turn them into a real song with more lyrics and, a smash hit in the vein of Spirit of 76?
I don't think there was any conscious decision to leave it off either Hurricane specifically. It just never became one of those songs that excited us as much as others. There's The Wind Blows Away My Words was another song that was around at the Hurricane era. That certainly made it into the master recording sessions. There is a very basic backing track of that in the Eye of the Hurricane tape locker. It's very unfinished, which is probably why it's never seen the light of day, but it was there. There's no backing track for Georgie or whatever it was going to be called in the future. Maybe it didn't excite John Porter as much as other songs. Say it was certainly on the master demo tape list of the best of the songs we had around at that time. I think it just didn't sit with all the other tracks. It was a little bit more straight ahead, polite rock in a way. It didn't quite have the edge. I think the lyric hadn't really formulated itself to drive the song into an epic like Spirit of 76. It was waiting to be formed properly, really, which might have changed the direction. It might have stayed more like the original.
You know, that brings up a really good point. A lot of fans wondered what happened to the acoustic guitars and the harmonica, especially on Strength. But then, Eye of the Hurricane, there's very little. There's some. And it's like the direction of the band was going towards more a mainstream sound in some cases that turned off some of the original fans.
And I think a lot of the identity of the band was changing in the sense that when the songs were first written for Declaration specifically, the harmonica riff stayed in the songs. Whereas when they started to come into Strength, they got taken over by the guitar, like the Spirit of 76. Ba, 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 ba. That line became a guitar line on Strength, whereas it was a harmonica line when it was written. And the band was moving to more of a straight rock sound because David embraced the electric. He kind of turned his back on the acoustic electric sound, which was very original and stamped a certain amount of identity onto the group. All of a sudden we were playing the same guitars the Edge was playing. You know, Dave was playing a Strat, which he'd seen the Edge use, or Stevie Ray Vaughan, and some of our sound got diluted because of that, really, when you look back at it. So it was who chose not to put Georgie on either Hurricane. Well, if anyone, probably it was John Porter, Steve Tannett. They were trying to be the middle ground. They were making decisions for the group who we'd lost the ability to make those decisions because of the impasse in the band over what songs were considered for recording. Eddie and I wanted our songs to be there. Dave and I wanted their songs to be the album. They'd already made their demos, same as Eddie and I had, independently. And it was Steve Tannett, the A&R man, that ultimately chose the songs that were recorded for either Hurricane, and John Porter, the producer.
Wow, that's a pretty heavy amount of information.
Well, then,
a lot of it.
I mean, not heavy in like a lot, heavy in like a lot of stuff I hadn't heard Mike actually express
publicly
like that before. I mean, maybe he's right. Maybe Georgie wasn't a fully realized song, but I think all the sounds are there for it to be a good song. I mean, it is 10 minutes long.
Well, I also think that some of the, I think you can hear a little bit in the question and the answer, really, him going back and thinking about that time, about how things were, and I think nostalgia wouldn't be the word to use. I think he's sort of feeling a little sad about
it. No, I mean, you heard what he talked about, losing the acoustic sound, you know, which is true. I mean, when I first heard Eye of the Hurricane, let's be honest, I thought the exact same thing. It was like refreshing to hear an acoustic guitar somewhere in Hollow Ground, and in Eye of the Hurricane, you could hear it. Those weren't my favorite songs, though, but I at least liked hearing that. You know, it was
right.
when I heard Eye of the Hurricane, the first part, it was the first time I didn't necessarily, there were songs I didn't necessarily like, so I had to pick out the parts that I liked to kind of stomach what was there. I have to admit, when I first heard the record, I was not a fan at all.
Yeah.
So it has grown on me over the years. There are songs that I do really like. Now, you know, there's one time I was really into Permanence and Change for some reason.
I actually think Permanence and Change to me is my favorite song on the record.
That's a great song. I like Hollow Ground a lot now. I even like Newtown Jericho, where at the time it sort of sounded like a Bon Jovi song, which is interesting that Mike mentioned that they were actually listening to Bon Jovi at that time. And that type of songwriting.
The funny thing is that if you listen to Bon Jovi, there's two parts to every Bon Jovi hit song. One of them is a danceable, sort of almost grooveless rock that is not a chorus high-flying with your fist in the air. And the second part of the song is the chorus with high-flying fist in the air. And at least... Eddie chose the right parts to.
Yeah, I agree. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that they sounds like Bon Jovi.
No.
What I'm saying is there certainly is that sort of craft of song. You can see how they were maturing and trying to do something different. Like Mike said, grow up from their punk roots to something else. Be professional songwriters. I think I was 17 at the time. I didn't want professional songwriters. I still wanted my punk rock band.
Yeah. I remember even as far back as the only review of Strength I ever read at the time. This was Strength, where they said it was from UCLA, and the alarm was huge around college campuses for Declaration. But the review was the alarm forgets its strengths or something like that, and it's because they had stopped using the harmonica and the acoustic guitar.
Yeah, that's what Mike just mentioned.
And
like how the harmonica was kind of pushed out. You know, for Stratocaster sound, and that's different. I mean, Dave gets to evolve his sound, right? He doesn't have to be the same guy the whole time. So, you know, we can't really fault him for that. Different things he wanted to do, and those guys want to get credit for songwriting. That's not a bad thing.
Yeah, and Twist even had mentioned that he started listening to other drummers and wanted to emulate, not emulate because he has his own sound, but started doing more straight-ahead drumming. But then you get to the first song on Change, and I know it's straight-ahead, but, you know, Someone on the River drumming is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, so it's totally different. But, I mean, it's different than what came before. But before we get to Change, actually, Change will be another day, to be honest.
Yeah, that whole other podcast. I've got a million of these podcasts.
But that was pretty heavy, what Mike said there. I mean,
let's let it sink in a little bit.
While it's sinking in, I think we should play what we have, a demo of Strength to Strength done with the full band.
Okay, let's hear a little. We'll hear a little bit of that. Yeah. And while you let the idea of songwriting credits and songwriters and divisions in the band that you might have heard of but had never heard from the horse's mouth before.
Yeah, maybe express.
Let that sink in a little bit while you listen to the Strength to Strength electric demo. Mm-hmm.
Let the River Run Its Course by that point.
Yeah, I had a little bit of time to reflect, but listening to that, and you don't hear Georgie or Strength to Strength or Let the River Run Its Course.
No, it's all its own thing completely.
It almost sounds like it could be Love, Hope, and Strength that was said in the chorus.
Oh, yeah, put it in there.
I was actually listening for it to hear Love, Hope, and Strength, but it didn't show up.
So that's like, I mean, if you think about it, we listened to the acoustic one, which came in between the last two earlier. You know, this is like almost a third completely different song. And the final Let the River Run Its Course is like almost like a fourth song. I mean, the lyrics are different than this, but the music is almost identical.
Yeah, I think this is getting towards where the strength demo came later they changed the words to Strength to Strength from this. This is No Georgie.
No, I think the acoustic Strength to Strength demo came before this one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's the acoustic song.
I'm sorry.
And then that, because that has Georgie in the middle eight, right? So it goes,
goes
Georgie, acoustic Strength to Strength, that has Georgie in the middle eight. Then this version, which is basically Let the River Run Its Course with different lyrics.
With different lyrics, okay.
And then Let the River Run Its Course. And then what I think is honestly one of Mike's best songs, which is the final version of Strength to Strength that came in the 2011 Sound and the Fury record that he put out.
Yeah,
which a lot of people do not like, you know, when Mike re-records stuff. And, you know, you can think whatever you want. I actually think that Sound and Fury record is amazing. Like, every song on it is incredible.
And I actually appreciate their re-recordings of a lot of things because, especially if it's a song like this, where you get to go back and hear the original version that he wanted to do.
Right. Obviously, Let the River Run Its Course was not the song that it started out to be.
Strength to Strength is, to me, a much more powerful song than Let the River Run Its Course.
Yeah. And
very similar, but it's a better song to me. And if that had been the second to last song on Raw, would have been, to me, made the album a little bit better.
Yeah, I agree. If we circle back to how we started this podcast, because we're just about winding it down.
Yeah.
Say that Raw seems to be a collection of songs that didn't quite make it for the alarm, and it kind of sounds that way,
yeah,
right?
And a cover.
And a cover too. But I think that there's a couple things that come out of this. You know, I think going back and looking at the archives and stuff and seeing where things came from is sort of a fascinating process to me. I can't wait to do this again for whatever songs we can.
We have to find a song that has a bunch of demos that started before we
did. The other thing is, I know Mike did. We did get him to answer some questions about this as well. But we're going to let Mike answer. You'll hear him answer a couple more questions, and then we're going to end this first podcast with a little bit from the version of Strength to Strength from Sound and Fury, which I think really is a good capper for the end of this about you know whether or not you think it's a good idea for things to be re-recorded. I think Strength to Strength proves that at the very least it can be interesting.
And if you want to hear these two songs in full, Let the River Run Its Course and Strength to Strength, those songs are actually still available for purchase on iTunes or wherever, so you can hear the songs in full. Strength to Strength on Sound of Fury is worth the
I think it's worth the price of that whole CD. Anyway, thanks for listening to this podcast for the first time. Mike's gonna answer a question, then we'll play a song for you. But for us, I think we're gonna go out with that.
So Mike, let's reiterate this a little bit. Steve and I were discussing this and trying to figure out where the electric version of Strength to Strength demo that we just heard was created. It's a pretty big gem and a nice find because it doesn't show up anywhere else. Except for on the track you sent over for us to use for this podcast. So where was that recorded? Was it actually in the Change demos, or was it before or after? Was it just you and Eddie? How was that created?
It was recorded as Strength to Strength on the Change demos, which were recorded while we were playing with Bob Dylan at the Greek Theatre in Los Angeles in 1988. And Eddie and I went into a demo studio in East LA and put down 20 songs that we had. A continuation of those was the Georgie song, but retitled as Strength to Strength. But it had that harmonica intro and the upbeat vibe to it. And it was more it does show that it belonged more to the, and could have sat alongside a continuing Alarm Declaration that had continued with harmonica, acoustic guitar led music like we'd been making with Declaration and Strength. It was, again, it never quite made it all the way to the Change album, probably because we thought it had been around for such a long time that none of us really had the energy to go back there and get that excited about it. All of a sudden, when we were making Change, we had a lot of songs, and the songs that had carried across from Hurricane were the ones that got discarded. That's probably some of the decisions that didn't allow it to continue. And possibly Tony Visconti heard things in other songs that were clearer, had a clearer definition to them, more finished lyric. I still don't think there's ever been a finished lyric for that song until 2001, when I recorded it for Sound and a Fury.
I think you mean 2011 for the release of the new version of Strength to Strength. But anyway, so on our timeline here, we finally get to The River Run Its Course, the final Alarm song credited to The Alarm. And our question was, it was a McDonald Peters song before then, and then suddenly, in pretty much its same form with different lyrics, it's credited to The Alarm. So was that a songwriting split decision? Was that actually the guys getting together and really rocking out and with ideas? How did that happen?
It was really because we'd taken a break, really, at Standards. And when after the Change album, Standards was mooted as a record by Miles Copeland to allow us to have some time away from each other, from the road, from the pressures of being in the band all through the 80s, and have a bit of a break from each other and our music and come back refreshed. But Miles being Miles, he couldn't just put a best of album. He had to have two or three new songs to go with it to make it marketable to our audience. And he called May up and said, would we cut some new songs? And as it happened, Eddie and I had already started demoing some new songs that we'd started working on during the Change touring era, which was always our way. We never sat back and waited for the next album to come. As soon as we never stopped writing songs between us, it'd always be, that was our main thing, being songwriters. That was the thing that excited us as much about being in a band, was to emulate our heroes like Strummer and Jones and Jagger Richards, Lennon McCartney, Matlock Yore and from the Rich Kids. We liked those collaborative situations. There was a romance about that that was just as attractive as being in a rock and roll band, Freddie and I, which was something why, again, a reason why we didn't want to give our identity away, to just become The Alarm, written by The Alarm, music by The Alarm. It wasn't just by The Alarm. That's what separated us from other bands. Our songs were formed outside of the rehearsal room and were arranged by a group, not necessarily written. And when we got together and we started demoing the songs for Standards, thinking we were just going to write one or two, we wrote The Road and we demoed it in my house in North Wales, and it was really exciting. And I knew that Nigel and Dave were in North Wales in Denbighshire demoing again for a potential Dave Sharp solo record. So I phoned Nigel and said, look, why don't we just make an album? You know, we're all working on music, and instead of taking a break from each other, maybe we need to go back to the beginnings and make an album that's raw, that's aggressive, that's sharp and incisive. And we all agreed that was something we wanted to do. And so it was, again, compromise, because Nigel straight away said, well, we've already written 10 songs. They're great. They could be the album. And I said, well, that's great, but you haven't even heard the two that Eddie and I have got going here and the rest. But, you know, these are amazing. And I said, well, look, if they're great, then they'll go on the record. And then he said, yeah, but if you if they all go on the record and they're written by Dave, he's going to have to sing them. And it was like, wow, okay, well, that's great as well. But, you know, the record company might not want to accept the record. They'd have a way to say they don't want to have a record with all of Dave Sharp singing it, because we have to make records that sound like the last record to a degree to protect their investment, so we don't do a Lou Reed and turn it with a electronic noise record like he did with Metal Machine Music to get out of his record deal. We had to make a record that still sounded like The Alarm. And I said to Nigel, unfortunately, The Alarm is recognised as having a lead singer called Mike Peters. And Nigel's like, oh shit, how can we get around that, you know? And, it, you know, they're hurtful things, but that's what bands do. You know, they don't think when they say these things. And so we reached a compromise that it would be three songs would be written by Nigel and Dave, three by Mike and Eddie, three credited to the band, which obviously ended up being the ones written by me and Eddie, and a cover version of Rockin' in the Free World to balance it out to being 10 songs that meant everyone was getting an equal share of the publishing, which was stupid. You can't make records like that. It just ends up being one massive compromise, and which is how Raw is. It is a compromise record. It's nowhere near as good as it could have been. It could have been an amazing record. We could have set the band free. You know, we could have liberated the group. The songwriting split thing, that was orchestrated by Nigel's stepfather, Peter Buckle. We all signed the agreement he drew up that meant anyone who didn't write a song still got a financial compensation for being part of the process. So it wasn't ever about money. It was just probably about, you know, Nigel and Dave obviously saw Dave as being the lead singer of the band, the lead writer, and that he could do better than what Eddie and I were doing. And that's how people see themselves. That's they make their choice. But unfortunately, the audience liked the band that was as envisioned by myself and Eddie McDonald to a degree, with Nigel and Dave being a part of that, not something that was led from the front through Dave or Nigel. And that's just wasn't the case of where they had great moments. They had the best moment, I think, in One Step Close to Home. And if they could have written 10 more of those, I'd have quite happily sat back and just been a rhythm guitarist in the new Who that The Alarm could have been. But those songs never came again after One Step Close to Home. But I wish they had, but they didn't. And so we kind of all compromised each other on Raw and Let the River Run Its Course is really a reflection of that lyrically. We've come too far to turn back now. I think subconsciously the lyrics represent the state of mind of the band and the individuals, that we were still trying to make the relationship work, albeit through compromise. And ultimately, somebody probably really needed to stand up and say, enough is enough. Let's make this band built around what's great. You know, Dave probably, if he wasn't getting his way, he should have had the courage to walk away and take his music with him. And rather than try to impose it onto the accepted version of The Alarm, I think if he'd gone on his own, and rather than force me out in a way, he would have been amazing. He would have felt liberated. He'd have taken all his frustrations with him. It would have liberated Eddie and I. And we could have all got on life separately and made something of each other.
Mike, there's one last song I want to talk about just on this record. It has to do with Let the River Run Its Course, because it's another cracker of a tune on that record, and it's called The Wind Blows Away My Words. And I know it was from earlier sessions also. So it probably had to do with songwriting splits and things about why it's on there. But how did it get on this record? We always thought it should have been the next single after Raw, but there wasn't another single released here after Raw. Not quite sure exactly why, but, you know, we'll get into that some other time. But explain the songwriting process a little bit with Raw, and start with the song we forgot, The Wind Blows Away My Words. Let's hear a little bit about that.
Wind Blows Away My Words was a song that was around for Eye of the Hurricane. I think I mentioned earlier that it did make it to the recording sessions and a backing track was laid down. I think it was quite different to the version that eventually came through on Raw. I always thought it was a really strong song. It started from a guitar riff of Eddie's. That was an Eddie riff, and that's where the song grew out of that. And I think as writers, that's what you're always looking for. If you to co-write, you want someone to come to you with a riff, and then you can add a melody and a chorus. And that can come from anybody. It could come from a drummer or a bass player with a riff. You know, I'm sure New Year's Day started with Adam Clayton going do 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 do. And a song was born, you know, or Sunday Bloody Sunday might have come from Adam going digga digga da da digga da, you know, all that kind of stuff. And that was the only person who ever came to me with riffs was Eddie, and this was one of his riffs, and I was more than happy to help put words to it and shape it and take it from simple chord sequence into something more full blown, and that's what we did together. And the words or the melody was very formed when it was played to the rest of the band. And, you know, Dave was assigned to play the riffs and that were created in the writing sessions between Eddie and myself. And like I said earlier, there was three guitarists in the band and Dave would take them on. And these songs were very much demoed for either Hurricane and as a song for Change before it eventually came on Raw. And I think the reason for that is that between every album, Eddie and I were being beaten up about who should be writing the songs from within the band, and it was taking its toll. You can't have people being so negative about something so positive relentlessly and not have it affect you or bring about a sense of, you know, knock your confidence. And that's what was happening. It became harder and harder to present new songs to the Alarm because you'd have a drummer sitting there with being indifferent and a guitarist that didn't care about whether they were any good or not. It was just, there was another agenda going on. And it was started to become something that we fought for at first and we could overcome with confidence, but as our confidence became eroded, became more and more difficult and became more and more something that was not enjoyable. The worst thing you could ever do in the Alarm was play a new song. It was such a tricky thing to do. So Eddie and I would play our songs to each other first to get our confidence up before we took anything to be faced by Nigel and Dave. And so, yeah, it was, and then I think again it became harder towards the end of the band's career for me to present a song as being just all by myself, which I was fast becoming that in the later years of the Alarm. I started writing independently, and then I felt nervous about playing a song to Eddie that I felt was complete, and so there was all kinds of conundrums going on towards the end that brought about the downfall of the original partnership. And Dave was always a bit resentful to us playing the riffs. When we were making the Change album, he'd stay all night trying to come up with a better riff than we already had. And then we'd walk back in the next day and it would be really hard to say, sorry, Dave, it's not as good as what we've already written. You know, it was true of many songs around the Change era. And Wind Blows Away was one of those that we could never quite resolve the conflict. It got left behind, which is a shame. Because there were three great guitarists in the Alarm, but the sort of rules of play were dictated by negativity towards the end. Whoever was the most negative won, rather than whoever was the most positive, which is how it was when the band began. And it's a shame, it's a tragedy, but that's the way life goes sometimes. the band was being overtaken by negativity towards the end, not just musically, but spiritually and mentally in the background with everything that happened with my sister and father and Nigel with his stepdad committing suicide. These were things that didn't happen to other bands at that age. And we weren't equipped to deal with it. And it started to affect the way we wrote, the way we created music, the way we appeared as a group in public. And that's, you know, there's lots of metaphors in Raw for the end of the band. Let the river run its course, these moments in time, the wind blows away my words. That really is what actually happened to us. And I think Raw as an album really stacks up when you look at it in light of the history of the original 1980s era of the group. It's a testament to where we could have gone. You know, if we really stuck the knife deep in our hearts, we could have made an incredible record with Raw. And sadly, we didn't get to make that record. But it's not to say that the music wasn't good or didn't meet the standards that we'd set with our first few albums. It was. It was just a more mature record, a deeper record. There was a lot of feelings that we couldn't express to each other coming out in the records, and that's why I think we've always come back to those songs. I love playing The Wind Blows Away My Words in the solo shows. It's a really powerful song, as good as any song The Alarm ever wrote. Strength to Strength, which originally was Georgie and Let the River Run Its Course, is a great song, whichever version is being played. And ultimately, that's what the aim of the group was. Certainly the aim for Eddie and myself was that the band should have a foundation of great songs that could be played by anybody on an acoustic guitar or by a band. And as long as they could stand to be played in the street or in a stadium, then it meant they were songs that would pass and would stand on their own two feet and live beyond the lineup or the writers or the name of the band that put them out. And I think that's true of all the songs Eddie MacDonald and I wrote, all the songs that we wrote MacDonald, Peters and Sharp, all the songs we wrote all four of us, which were Strength and Rain in the Summertime. Some big songs got credited to the whole band. And it's a testament to what the group was, which we were. It was a band of songs.
Wow. Well, speaking of a band of songs, the Strength to Strength can currently only be heard by a fan, the full version, on the Sound of the Fury record. So, you know, tell us a little bit about what made you go back, and then also, was that the starting of you going back and thinking about the redoing Strength and Declaration and probably other records to come? We know Second Generation had been there a while back, really a long time ago, actually, and before the 2000s. But this is the first time you started re-recording some stuff, and all the songs on it are fantastic, with Strength to Strength being, you know, my personal favorite. And everyone on this podcast is going to get to hear most of it, not all of it, right at the end. So tell us what your reasons were for going back and trying to rediscover some of these things.
Strength to Strength appeared on The Sound and the Fury because it was the first time I really thought we should be looking backwards, because it was the 30th anniversary of the band that is known as The Alarm being born in June of 1981 in Prestatyn, and striking out across the world from that beginning. And there was a lot that didn't get its chance in the spotlight, like a song like Strength to Strength, Let the River Run Its Course, and its predecessor Georgie. They were all works in progress. And I felt that it was an opportunity to look back, take some of the songs that hadn't been publicly acknowledged in a way they maybe should have been, or I felt they should have been, and mix them up with songs from the modern era to show the continuity that the writing the line, if you follow the history of the Alarm through the songwriting, it is continued through the work that I have created from in the poppy fields, even through Breathe and Feel Free and Rise. The line that runs through the Alarm continues through that work, and it continues into the poppy fields and beyond. And I think I wanted to highlight that fact with 30 years of history and the gap between the original line, the break in the line, and the continuation. And the Sound and the Fury album is a great way to bring everything together, remind people of that line and the continuation of the work, and to express the future of the band by taking one step back to go two steps forward. And I think it was the first step of what has become a modern representation of the Alarm now, through the re-recording of Declaration in 2014 and continued into Strength in 2015, and will continue with Hurricane in 2017 when that time comes around. And I think it's been a great, it's been like animating the sleeve notes, really, which is hopefully what this sort of podcast is doing for people. They're hearing and seeing things come to life that they've read about or heard about. Here we are discussing them, playing demos. This is the whole process that started with Sound of the Fury and probably originally began with the Second Generation Volume 1 back in the early 90s. That was a way of shining a light on forgotten parts of the Alarm's history, because it all goes into making the story. You can't just have the hits. That they don't tell the real story of the band. There's a whole alternative history running it underneath the group, which is just as important as what you can see on the surface. And that we've got plenty of fans like you guys, Jeff and Steve, that have loved digging below the ground and have found incredible gems below the surface. And I'm still a massive fan and a scholar and a student of the work of the Alarm. I'm always looking back on my work, on my lyrics, on my recordings, on my relationships with musicians, to learn, to be able to go forward, to pick up on the mistakes, to rectify them, to make good on the promise as laid out through the lyrics and the stance that the band has taken over the years, or I've taken as an individual in the name of the group, and to make good on those promises. And so I like to think we've a lot of knowledge about the band that's been imparted. It's not obviously going to be to everybody's taste. Nobody wants to see change happen for the sake of it. But I don't think changing Declaration and changing Strength in the way they have done has been to close a door on anything. It's refreshed the past, and it's replenished the interest in the group as well, and in those songs. I think it's great to be able to go back and think, hear the original lyrics and compare them with the life story that's told in some through the spirit of 86 in 85, or as it is in 2015. It's only about putting out more than there already is. And if you don't want any more than already exists, that's fine. But if you're like me or other people and you want to get more and more and you want to get closer to the source, then this is how it's going to be from now on. So thanks to everybody for tuning into the podcast. Look forward to sharing more adventures and trips underground and new perspectives on the history of the Alarm with you in the very near future. Thank you.
Day in the struggle to survive, I see good and I see bad. We've seen our dreams turn to dust, and now we must rebuild. There'll be no more second chances. We must not lose this again. Tonight we'll fight until the end. We'll fight with strength on strength. We were young and easy. We didn't know what heartache could do to a man. Didn't know about hardship or faded dreams. We've come too far to turn back now. Forever I'll follow you, my friend, forever and ever. From strength to strength, forever I'll follow you. From strength.
Hi, this is Jeff Fulton. You just got done listening to the first official Alarm podcast, the Never Let the Fire Die, Volume 1. And the song you just heard, where we not the entire song, we kind of mix it up a little bit. We don't want to have the entire song on here, was Strength to Strength off The Sound and the Fury, a 2011 release by 21st Century, Mike Peters redoing a whole bunch of fantastic songs, early Alarm songs and his own songs that maybe didn't get the treatment they deserved before, or he just wanted to redo them. Some show notes, The Stand and The Deceiver are not credited to The Alarm, as we had said earlier. The Stand is a McDonald Peters Sharp song. The Deceiver is actually a McDonald Peters song. Moments in Time did have earlier versions. Moments in Time was called Coming Home and Take Me Home. And obviously, as Mike Peters mentioned, the lyrics were changed a little bit toward on the Raw, maybe to signal his dissatisfaction with the way the band was going. At the end of every one of these podcasts, we're going to take you out with one of our favorite Alarm songs, or a song that hasn't had a lot of play. This time, it is Change One, recorded for the Change album. The story behind this song, straight from Mike Peters, is that the Change Two song that Dave Sharp had recorded, an incredible, fun slice of pop magic that is on the Change album, was a song about personal change, and they recorded Change One because it was more of a generic song about change. And they were going to allow the record company to choose what they wanted to do with the song Change. No matter what or how it happened, or Tony or Mike or Dave, whoever chose it, it's a great tune. This is a previously unreleased version of Change One, actually only released on the reissue of Raw. The original version of Change One was a B-side on the Raw single. So here it is. Enjoy.
An 8-Bit Rocket Studios production.